Hey, everybody. Thought Crime Saturday. Blake Neff, Tyler Boyer, Jack Posobiec join us. Christ is King. What a perfect thought crime topic for Easter. We talk about P. Diddy. Is he the new Black Epstein? And finally, girls getting randomly punched on the street in New York. And Andrew Huberman. What should we think of him? Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Subscribe to our podcast by opening up your podcast application and typing in Charlie Kirk Show. Get involved with Turning Point USA, the nation's most important organization, at tpusa.com. That is tpusa.com. Start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Okay, everybody. Happy Holy Week. We are here for Thought Crime. You know, we didn't know who was going to be on the program. People were dropping like flies, and they just kind of, I was going to say came back from the dead, but that would be inconsiderate for Holy Week.
Yeah, that's probably not the best thing to make. It is Maundy Thursday, as we were discussing.
Why is that Maundy not Thursday? Good? That's the whole point of the week.
I don't want to appropriate the actual resurrection, but Tyler's here. We didn't know if Tyler's going to be here.
We're all going to resurrect because he has.
Amen. Amen. Blake.
Amen.
Bud Light and Boeing Blake.
Bud Light Blake, Boeing Blake, the Blake Shaviks.
And Jack, it is Warpath today. I was corrected. It is Maundy Thursday. Is that right?
No, it's Maundy Thursday because right. It feels like a Monday.
It is the beginning of the Passion. Is Thursday coming into Friday? So that is a perfect segue to our first topic, which has taken the internet by storm. And I want Jack actually to introduce this topic. I usually have Blake do it because Jack, you have been posting this, and I think I posted it too a lot because I believe it fundamentally. And it involves Candace Owens. It involves charges of anti-Semitism. It involves the Daily Wire. It involves Andrew Klavan. It involves Easter.
It involves thought crime.
Yes. I mean, it is one of the more interconnected topics we've ever covered on thought crime. Jack, who is king?
Jesus Christ.
Why?
Jesus Christ.
Why is that statement all of a sudden popping off on the internet?
Well, so Christ is King is a statement that it's popping off right now because there's been a controversy attached to it regarding our mutual friend, Candace Owens, who's recently departed from the Daily Wire. And we were not told that this was what predicated her leaving. But then, of course, so as you mentioned, some of her former colleagues have come forward and they have essentially presented this and forwarded this as the reason for her leaving, her declaring Christ as King, but then also equating that with charges of anti-Semitism. Now, a lot of this comes along because of this argument that you'll hear people make saying that, well, if you're Christian, you know, aren't we called to catechize the world? Aren't we called to go forward and spread the good news? Now, at Catholic Mass, that is the last thing we are told at the very end of the Mass, to go forth, specifically to go forth. And I've always kind of viewed that as a mission statement. You know, you're supposed to go forth and go and do that. But there are other people who will say that it is intolerant or anti-Semitic because, of course, the Jews do not accept Jesus as the Messiah. Now, if you're a Christian, this obviously is going to come into some tension. So you could on one hand deal with that by saying, well, we pray for Jews to accept Christ. Maybe if you know somebody, you can talk to them about it if they seem open to it. You know, all the different ways that you can try to have these conversations, live your life in a certain way where people might want to emulate that. And you say, well, it's because I have a Christ-centered life, and then you can use that to sort of open it up. But other people will say that it's actually anti-Semitic because you're not. Not only are you not accepting of Jews as the way they are, but instead you're asserting some kind of sovereignty over Judaism. And a lot of this goes back, and Rabbi Shmuley, who was on Alex Jones and a few other shows recently, has been talking about this as well. They'll take it all the way back to the Pharisees. They'll take it back to the execution of Jesus, which of course tomorrow is Good Friday, is the commemoration of, all the way back when this very question came up. And I want everyone to remember this, that when you look at a depiction of the crucifixion and it says I-N-R-I at the top of the cross, that stands for Jesus the Nazarene, King of the Jews, I-N-R-I.
And they did it to mock him. It was not praising. It was, hey, look at this, you know.
Right. It was written by the Romans, and I believe in the biblical narrative, it actually says that it was written in Latin and Greek. In the original,
and
typically, it was
and
just
the account
Latin
is panel. That they say Jesus, King of the Jews, and then it's that reportedly, I believe the chief priests come to Pilate and they say, "You should change it to say, this man said, I am the King of the Jews," and he says, "What I have written," which many bosses have said since.
So I saw this whole thing unfolding. Yeah, go ahead, Jack. Finish it. I would just throw out to finish
the bookend of that, because there's an interesting biblical bookend there, because the other time that Jesus is specifically referred to as king is at his birth, but also not by other Jews. If you notice this, it's not Jews that call Jesus king or even King of the Jews at the time. Who is it? Other Gentiles, the Magi. So it's the Magi in the Nativity who refer to Jesus as King of the Jews. And then it's the Romans all the way at Jesus's death that creating this sort of bookend of him being quote unquote declared king. But of course, as Christ has always said, my kingdom is not of this world.
And it is repeated. The most common verse in, I don't want to say, because Revelation is in the Catholic Bible, obviously, but is Revelation when it's, you know, Jesus is on his throne. And his name is written King of Kings, Lord and Lords. That is where really in modern parlance, this idea of Christ kingship comes from. It's also repeated in 2 John and also in Isaiah, which is the most specific prophetic book in the Old Testament that talks about a king of the world, be called Prince of Peace, Everlasting Father, Mighty God, Wonderful Counselor. We repeat those at Christmas time. So I now want to play a piece of tape here, so Candace Owens out at the Daily Wire. Accusations of anti-Semitism, which are not true, by the way. I know Candace. She traveled around the world literally to be with me at the embassy opening in Jerusalem in Israel. She's not an anti-Semite. I've met anti-Semites. It's not her. Does she have heterodox opinions on Israel? Yes, but she is not an anti-Semite. And people who use that are intellectually sloppy and lazy. I will defend Candace. Happy to dialogue and discourse with people on that. So she's out of the Daily Wire. She starts posting Christ as King. Is this correct, right, Blake?
She has posted it. I don't know if she originally started doing it.
And I'll be honest, a surprising response from Andrew Klavan, who I really intellectually respect and support in a lot of different things. He comes out and focuses on this particular thing that Candace posted. And I listened to his Sunday episode, and I said, boy, of all the different things to try and say that was anti-Semitic, this is not the one that I would go all in on.
Yeah.
Right? Just from there's other things that Candace has said that I don't believe are anti-Semitic that could have probably been a more comfortable attack vector for the reason that we're going to dismiss her. However, they go all in on this one. Listen to Andrew Klavan, who essentially was as close to a Daily Wire press release as you're going to get. Okay? Play cut 112.
Christians have welcomed me with open arms, except this Christ the King anti-Semitic crowd. Christ is the King, and one day every knee will bow and recognize it, because he's not just my King, he's King of the universe. But when you use that phrase to mean that God has abandoned his chosen people, the Jews, through whom he came into this world incarnate and that he's broken his promises, his covenant with the Jews. You are quoting scripture like Satan does in the Bible. You are quoting scripture to your purposes, and that to me is specifically wicked.
I'm at a loss. I mean, I love the word. I spend a lot of time in churches, like a lot, with a lot of pastors. I can't even get in the same galaxy of believing that saying Christ is king is anti-Semitic. The only way I can see it is not anti-Semitic, but you could be potentially a jerk if you go up to a Jew and taunt them and say Christ is king. I guess that could be like mildly uncomfortable.
So I think the context this is happening in that set people off is one, a lot of Groiper types have followed the entire Candace Daily Wire drama online. And there has been a practice with some of these people and those who agree with them where I think they will just like spam it in Twitter replies. So Ben Shapiro tweets something they don't like, or Boring tweets something they don't like, or Klaibin there. And they will just all like they will respond, Christ is king, like they're, you know, shouting a magic spell at them or something. And in context, I can see, you know, people perceiving that as hostile. I don't think I would call it anti-Semitic. I could say it is perhaps not the best type of evangelism to engage in.
Yeah.
It is counterproductive in that
but
way.
But I to all of a sudden equate, which is like the greatest horror of the 20th century, which is the Holocaust, like as evil as you get, and to just like all of a sudden introduce a three-word truth statement that all of us believe to say that to say to Christ is king is anti-Semitic. And so Tyler, you want to chime in here?
I just want to say I learned this lesson from someone that's Jewish, who I respect, because I didn't realize that this happened. There's actually an entire, and I was trying to find this, I'll see if I can find it. There's like an entire website that has all these different phraseologies that come from typically like really hardcore evangelical crowds that if you say it, it's anti-Semitic.
It's like ADL?
Where it's like,
is it the Anti-Defamation League?
Well, or? I didn't know this. So I grew up in a very non-Jewish community. I'm from Arizona. We have no Jews in Arizona as like a context. We have a lot of Catholic Mexicans, right? We don't have Jews. So I don't know anything about what makes how a Jewish person ticks. I said something. I'm not even going to say it because I don't want to like put this out into the world again. But I said something that was basically a biblical story. And a very common phrase that's used in my religion, in my religious talk. And it was told to me immediately that that was an anti-Semitic slur by saying that because it has all this different meaning that Jews had taken out because it's a very common conversation that's had within when referencing the Bible. My point is there's a lot of different phrases like this that the Jewish community has taken to heart. And it seems like it happens
pretty
frequently.
I suppose let's pretend the inverse is right. So if somebody walks around with a sign that says Allah is God and Muhammad is the great prophet, is that inherently anti-Christian? No, I mean I don't think so at all. I mean, is it against Christian theology?
Now,
but
what I will say is, you can find Jews who will argue, and they'll say the difference here is that. Like the entire, because the concept of Christianity is very bound up with Judaism, more so than Islam.
Jesus
even
was
is.
A Jew, yes.
Yeah, but not even just that. It's that. So we claim there is an Old Testament and a New Testament.
Correct.
So what Christians did from the Jewish perspective is we came in, took their holy books and said, actually, this is about our religion and your prophecies actually mean this. And here's our new books that we're also adding to it. And this is what's really going
it's
on.
It's hilarious. It's Jews that did that. That's what's
yes,
so funny.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, so
it was Jewish
another,
followers
very,
and devout Sabbath keepers.
Yeah, and a very valid take is you could say actually even, and many Christians have argued this historically, that essentially what you have is you have a split in Judaism, and some Jews became
correct.
Christian and also got a lot of followers elsewhere.
That's
and
exactly
other Jews
right.
sort of doubled down on certain Jewish practices to create modern rabbinic Judaism as we understand it today. This will also be very controversial because to some extent you're kind of saying modern Judaism is a newer religion than Christianity in that sense.
Oh, I found it. I found the glossary. This is it.
The American Jewish Council or
the
something?
The AJC's Translate Hate, Stopping Anti-Semitism Starts with Understanding It. Here's the whole glossary. You want to hear the table of contents just real quickly? Blood libel.
Are you kidding me?
Clannish. Using the word conspiracy theory.
What? This stuff creates more anti-Semitism. When you try to like micro police people's statements saying that they're anti-Semitic.
Illuminati, of course. We know that one. New World Order.
Wait, Illuminati's anti-Semitic?
That there's a whole chapter.
Oh, that one's definitely. Come on.
Like, I never would think Illuminati anti-Semitic.
Oh, man.
I don't think that my way. Sweet I think Illuminati as everybody's, the deep state is, you know.
Yes,
stuff.
Of course.
Yeah. It's all like pro. They always, Illuminati's always bound up with like the Rothschilds, who are obviously a wealthy Jewish family and all of that.
They were like weird. A secular German banking family.
It's so much. It's a deep rabbit hole. Anti-Semitism is really old. So there's like lots of weird.
I'm just so disconnected from anti-Semitism. I just, like, I mean, in all that kind of, like, inner, like, chatting circles that it seems like such a reach. When I think of Illuminati, I think of people that do this hand sign and they have, like, saying rap songs, like, Illuminati, got my mind, soul, and body. What's that rap song that the, who's saying that?
I don't know. I don't listen to this crap.
Wait, they have an entire chapter that globalism, using the term globalist, means you're anti-Semitic.
See this,
and they have Ann Coulter's
tweets. This is the sort of stuff that is so outrageous to me.
They use Ann Coulter. When it's anti-Semitic.
Okay, but let's be clear though, and I want to give the Daily Wire a little bit of an olive branch, but here's where I think they went wrong: that anti-Semites can say Christ is King. That is true.
Yeah,
but they never made that argument. The argument is they said the phrase itself has become an anti-Semitic phrase.
Yeah, I mean, I want to hear, we'll just seize on one of the arguments. I know we're friendly with James Lindsay, but we might.
James is the best.
Yeah, but he did say this on March 24th. He said, Christ is King, as it is declared, is a sophisticated and manipulative dialectical trap like Black Lives Matter, and Christians are being baited into it by a few public figures and by a band of antisocial troublemakers, likely led by a Fed.
So I think what James is saying here, and I trust James' instincts 100%. He's actually one of my closest friends. Is he's saying that the people that are pushing the Christus thing is they're not trying to evangelize. They're trying to troll. But we're asking the question, are those three words inherently anti-Semitic? And also, I will say, Christ is King is not as Black Lives Matter. It's just those are two different statements, okay? I just want to make that clear. But I think it's so destructive when you try to say that the primary truth claim of Christianity is Jew hatred. I just I'm not going to put up with that or act as if that's defensible.
Well, and here's the deal too. The core of this entire debate since Jesus came is this whole concept of Christ being King, right? So like, yeah, I mean, I'm Mormon. I have lots of disagreements with Charlie on things, and their statements that we fundamentally have disagreements on doctrine, right? This is the core doctrine.
Yeah, so, it's the Church of Latter-day Saints of Jesus Christ.
So this is the part. This is the part where it's like, where if somebody came to me and said, you know, again, there's some statement that, you know, that's very prominent in Mormonism, which is like, Joseph Smith was a prophet or whatever. Yeah, that's the core fundamental divergence from my faith and the Baptists that he came from, or the all the evangelicals that he claimed from. That's part of the whole debate. That's not anti-Semitism. That's not anti. I don't view that as anti-Mormon to attack, you know, that whole thing. It's just you disagree with that, and that's fundamentally so. Taking that off the table, in my opinion, is actually really anti. It's really going after Christians.
I totally agree. It's anti-Christian. I mean, it's like to even say that those three words are anti-Semitic is trying to like almost dull the sword that is Christianity in the most not negative way, but like what are we supposed to say? Like, well, Jesus is a good dude. Like the idea is that there's a kingship, that there the ultimate thing that unites us is that there is a lordship above all.
That is, well, that's
a divinity.
That's
Christ.
That's the core of Christianity, yes. Right? It's like if you do not believe that Christ is who he is, you are not a Christian. And so I agree with Blake, is like if you're going to go hound somebody in the face like about this, it's the same thing that I believe with like people with like the standing on the corners yelling at people about masturbation. Like probably not the best way to get people to stop their bad habits. It's insensitive. It's mean. It's whatever. It's probably not the best form.
I'm going to yell whatever I want on street corners, okay?
But you have a right to, but I just don't think.
It's not the best form.
You said it the right way, though.
I'll give street creatures money.
You said that's not the best form of evangelizing, right?
Yeah.
You were right about that. But that doesn't mean that you can shirk. You're asking people to shirk the fundamental principle, the concrete foundational principle of your faith, of your being, of your every fiber of you. Is insane, no matter how much you disagree with
it. It's even worse than that, is that they're calling it evil because anti-Semitism is evil, right? So they're saying the phrase.
It's kind of, they're doing this, like a transmutation of it, or a transitive property where they're just saying like, yeah, that thing is bad and we've attached this phrase to that thing. Now that phrase is equally bad.
But let's try to say because I really respect Jeremy Boring and I know him. And I like Ben a lot. I've known him for a long time. And I like Matt Walsh and I like Andrew Klavan. How did they come to this conclusion? Jack, they came to this conclusion, I think, because the primary drivers of the phrase Christ is King flirt with anti-Semitic, let's say, tropes or narratives online. Is that correct? So they blurred the phrase with maybe the community that's pushing it. And I think that's intellectually sloppy. I don't think that's rooted in theology. But Jack, you said that Jeremy mentioned in his Twitter space or whatever that this was a primary reason why they dismissed Candace. Is that right?
Well, no. There was this like report that came out. I don't think it was I didn't listen to all of Jeremy's space, so it could have come up there, but I'm not basing this on that. There was this report that came out that said there was some kind of internal meeting where this was discussed, and that what Andrew Klavan said afterwards was, and I'm not putting that out in any way, and that could be wrong, et cetera, a grain of salt. But again, we don't have a lot of good information on this anyway, and I wish that everybody would just be a little more forthcoming on this whole thing, but it feels like they haven't been. And when that's what we want. We want clarity at the end of the day. We all want clarity. And so there's this question about whether or not what Andrew Klavan was saying on his show was then done after this public meeting where that phrase was specifically brought up. And so here's my point to get back to you. And I think it's kind of clear that it certainly had something to do with it. You know, this idea that, you know, the Groypers pushing Christ is King is the reason that Candace was saying Christ is King, or that she meant it in the same way, or that they mean it in an anti-Semitic way, et cetera, it's like, whoa, hold on a second here. Christ is King. That's number one. That's the most important thing. And if people are saying it, perhaps they just mean it to mean what it is. Sometimes saying Christ is King just means Christ is King. And if you're attributing stuff to it without talking to the people about why they believe that, without asking them what their morals are, without asking them what their intentions are, and ascribing all of these, like, oh, it's the same as Black Lives Matter. Oh, it's a dialectic trap. Oh, it's actually secretly anti-Semitic. It's hateful. It's this, that's a... The real question I would have is, number one, do you really think going into this in Holy Week is a good move? You know, I think it was like Palm Sunday when all of this went down. And then on the other side of it, do you really think that the outside world knows about all of this e-drama on Twitter and all the rest of it? Because if you have a narrative, I'm just saying this from an optics standpoint right now, but if you have a narrative out there that somebody was embracing Christ too much and that was the reason that they were let go from their job, that's really not a good narrative that you want spread. And so the issue that I have with, and I'm not even talking about Daily Wire at this point, but the issue that I have is that it feels to me as though people all of a sudden have a... So Christians are the majority in the United States, and Christians have always been the majority of the United States. We've been a Christian majority country literally since our inception, since prior to the inception of the current government, the Constitution, et cetera. And so it doesn't seem like people have an issue with people being like passively Christian in America since the 1960s. But all of a sudden, when people take that Christianity active and when they put it into active practice, particularly in political spaces, particularly within social spaces, all of a sudden, all these issues come up, all these accusations come up, and all of you want a Christian theology, or a theocracy, you want to go full fascist like the Christian Taliban, or on the flip side, you're just anti-Semitic or you're Islamophobic, and all of these different accusations is to say, well, wait a minute, what actually matters to you? This belief of that we need to be tolerant of everything out there under the sun, or do you actually believe Christ is King? Yes or no? And for me, that's really what matters the most. And that's always going to be what matters the most.
Yeah. And I think there's also an over-examination of intentions here, because intentions really don't matter that much. I mean, in this particular situation, and I've always used, the trans debate, because they like to seize on intentions like, oh, Mr. Thomas means well. He's like, no, he's a cheater. It doesn't matter. He's in the practice of cheating.
Literally so, policing thought.
Yes, I guess I would say what disappoints me here is, to the extent this is dividing the Daily Wire and Daily Wire supporters and the different people that they have there, is we know there are sincere Christians at the Daily Wire still. And I just checked to see if they've said anything, and they have been totally silent about, or at least they certainly haven't tweeted Christ is King. And I think you can do that in ways where they could engage with what's going on here, and why they can say it and how it's not anti-Semitic to say it. And I am sincerely disappointed they have not done so, especially given the context of what this time is. And I think they could easily have the same conversation we're having, say some of the same things we're saying here, and it would not destroy their lives, or even probably cause substantial damage. And it would affirm, it would be a mitzvah, it would be a good thing to do. It would be a good thing for the faith that they profess. And I don't want to say I'm let down. They don't need my approval or anything, but I do think it's unfortunate.
Well, and I wanted to say this point too, because you brought up a really, really important point. And I actually think that this is probably the entire thing and an overreaction because of this, and this is why it matters to understand this and know this activity. A lot of the Groypers, who there's some that are okay-ish and they just want to have an honest debate about some of these issues, and there's others that are vastly conspiratorial, and more importantly, they are students of Saul Alinsky. And this is what they do. And you brought up a really important point. The thing that we're not seeing is every time that they post something and Ben posts something, it's the crisis game, crisis game, crisis game, crisis game, crisis game. And nobody's seeing that and talking about that. That's a Saul Alinsky tactic to get in the heads of the guys at the top of the Daily Wire. We've seen this activity before. You have to put on blinders and ignore it and get past it and just live your life. But it's really hard to. I think that the years of that type of activity building up is part of what helped the reactiveness of this. And I'm not saying that Candace that statement really bothered them, but I'm guessing she knew. And again, I know that.
But it's not relevant. I'll close with this.
It doesn't take the truth away from it.
Yeah.
But my point is that you can't let Alinskyites get into your head and allow you to create your decision making.
But here's the final test, which is, and I'll tell, at San Diego State, a young man came up to me with a sweatshirt that said, "Christ is King." And I said, "I love your sweatshirt," because I didn't know any of this stuff was going. Like, I don't have Twitter. If you don't say that you like it as a Christian, then you got a problem.
It just
if all
feels,
of a sudden you say, "I don't like your sweatshirt," like, wait a second.
We're gonna this goes the way it goes on other social issues with conservatives in 30 years, we'll be arguing Jesus is okay anti-Semitic? Is it offensive?
No, but that
Jesus was a good dude.
That's the right point that they make, though. And again, this is where a lot of people, this is like MAGA, right? This is like other things. It's like, wait, you can't really disagree with making America great again. It's the same thing with good slogans. And again, this is the whole Black Lives Matter thing. America's devolved.
But it's different because Black Lives Matter was a group. We have to understand that. They were organization.
I know, but how it started was the phrase. How can you normie people in blue states could not disagree with that statement. That's why they got corporate America suckered into this entire thing, and they figured it out. They're like, oh my gosh, we could never fall for that again. But that's like where you put statements that are out that you can't disagree with, and it's in the right. There's group people on the right that are smart to do that, because we should do some of that. You know, but it's like when you're just like prodding in people's faces just to like make a point instead of what the actual meaning is and live by it, then it cheapens it. And then we can't let that happen with a phrase like Christ is King. Right?
Yeah. And the final thing
but
is,
go
ahead, Jack.
Just to throw out that there's a power in saying Christ is King that from a obviously spiritual and theological, yeah. but also political perspective, because saying Christ is King presupposes Christian morality. It presupposes the Christian values. It presupposes the Christian way of life in a political context. And that presents an entire framework that is a viable competing vision to everything that the left pushes. Everything from the LGBT agenda to the race agenda to everything that they push in society. If you say Christ is King and you center the world on Christ, now you're pushing your entire lens away from all of, you know, the gay race communism stuff, and you're actually putting it on something that matters. And oh, by the way, is intended to be universal.
That's how we know
it's a viable competing vision.
Everyone's getting yes.
And speaking of the race or all this weird Marxist communism stuff, it's, I will note, in past very brutal wars, one of the watchwords of rebels has been Viva Cristo Rey, long live Christ the King. That was like what
Mexicans, Rex.
Mexicans would use that when they were fighting against their Marxist government. Spaniards would use it when fighting, I believe, against Napoleon's armies and in the Spanish Civil War. And that has been a watchword of Christian warriors throughout history, if you will. So we should, I think we should not just give away that phrase as something you're not allowed to say.
We have to get to other topics. I'll say one last thing. Christ is King. Okay, let's go to here. Wake up every day and choose freedom. Yes, my favorite coffee ad that I have to heavily edit. It drives me crazy. This is written for a different show. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate bad coffee? I, for one, really hate awful coffee, which is why I'm so excited to introduce to you guys a coffee revolting against bad coffee, 1775 Coffee Company. In 1775, the world awakened to a new era, and now 1775 Coffee Company is bringing you a coffee that embodies that revolutionary spirit. Created with passion and precision, our beans are ethically and exclusively sourced from the finest coffee farms of Bolivia. 1775 Coffee Farm to Cup Journey ensures the highest quality, authenticity, and sustainability from start to finish. What with each sip, your palate will recognize and appreciate the dedication and passion that goes into crafting the single source brew. 1775 Coffee Company takes pride in offering customers a truly exceptional coffee experience with their premium coffee collection, but their dedication to this revolution extends beyond just coffee. They want to make sure that you understand that they joined forces with Rumble, who we love, in defense of our most fundamental rights, freedom of speech. Coffee that's sure to awaken all senses, including the sense of freedom. Choose 1775 Coffee by going to 1775coffee.com/thoughtcrimes and use promo code thoughtcrimes for 10% off at checkout on your first order. That is 1775 Coffee, brewed to perfection, crafted with revolution. Revolting against bad coffee, farm to cup, Bolivia bean farm to Florida roasters to your door. So check it out right now. Exclusive partners with Rumble, 1775.coffee.com/thoughtcrimes with an S.
We spent a long time on that one, so I'll give you two choices. We can either jump to Diddy and talk about, you know, the new Epstein, or we can talk about Huberman. I know you were really into that topic.
I think the Huberman's really interesting. I don't know the extent of all the details, because apparently this guy lived a very full life.
Very full. I don't know how.
Dance
do we want to talk about this, or do you want to go to Diddy? We'll just decide first.
Let's do Diddy first.
Okay.
Right. I think Diddy is more applicable, and I've gotten. By the way, I'm written
more up, appealing to the masses.
What's hilarious is, you know, the media is something. I'm written in like 15 different Diddy articles. Charlie, I couldn't tell you the difference between Diddy to Jay-Z to Lil Wayne a week ago, and all of a sudden I'm like a P. Diddy expert.
You are the expert. It's true. Someone make that as tagline. He's the P.
If
Diddy.
If there was a gun to my head and you said name a song that P. Diddy has ever performed, produced, or wrote, I'd be in a cemetery.
I think I'd die too, actually.
This headline. Watch Charlie Kirk attempt to link P. Diddy's arrest Jeffrey Epstein and the resignations of two Republicans.
Written by Media Matters staff. Hey, but Ilhan Omar already told us the best P. Diddy song. It's all about the Benjamins.
Oh, is that by him? Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, is it all about the Benjamins by Pity?
Diddy
or Pity?
Pity?
I don't know. Puff what? Daddy, yes. P. Diddy.
Okay, so just to be clear, rappers are allowed to change their name whenever they want. So he has at various points been Sean Combs, Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, and Diddy.
I got nothing against Diddy. The name changes, okay? A lot of people in the Bible change their name. Abram to Abraham, Saul to Paul.
You're saying Diddy. And wait, you know, a lot of the patriarchs also were allowed by God to have multiple wives.
Bad boys. No, that's what I was getting
at. And so Diddy also seems to have had multiple.
Well, hold on a second. Abram tried to sell Sarah to the Pharaoh of Egypt.
Diddy a prophet?
I wouldn't go that far, but let's get into the actual meat of the accusation. So I made all this news about Puff Daddy. That was one of his names, right?
Yeah, Puff Daddy is one.
Okay. Because apparently he had cameras everywhere and like underground tunnels. And I said, obviously this guy is like rapper Epstein.
A lot of prophets could see things that they were not present for. Did Elijah have a camera?
In Hebrew means to be able to see forward. It literally means
Elijah, I believe, was able to like see things that were unseen.
That's right.
Yeah. Did he have cameras all over Israel?
I don't think Elijah had a Aurelian security state.
But you don't know for sure.
I don't know if that technology was invented yet.
Well, the whole theory about technology being just completely obliterated and the restart, I mean, this could bring up all that whole conversation. But
who wants to go through actually the details of this? Because I'm as confused as you are.
Okay, so all of this, and I say this as someone who did know who P. Diddy was.
Well, I mean, obviously I knew the name. I couldn't pick him out of LL Cool J, P. Diddy, Lil Wayne, I Die.
So the origin of this is, so last month, in late February, he was sued by a former associate of his who I believe was a producer. They like worked, they traveled, they lived together for a long time, not in that sort of way, allegedly. And he sued him and made a lot of pretty spectacular allegations against Diddy. So this is where a lot of the wild stuff and this is coming from. He's claiming that he's the one who says Diddy has hundreds of cameras in his home so that they can see everything that's going on in every room. And Diddy has some pretty wild parties. So in theory, he could have loads of blackmail on people. He says there's sort of trafficking type activity where there's girls and some of them are underage and they're being at these parties. He also claims there's been controversies with Diddy in the past. Like he was at a club where there was a shooting and he was with his then girlfriend, Jennifer Lopez. And now he says Diddy actually confessed to him that he was involved in that shooting, which he was never convicted of anything with, and that Jennifer Lopez was carrying his piece for him, all sorts of drama. And I think this has suddenly blown up because I think initially people didn't take it super seriously. But then this week, the federal government raids his homes in connection with all of this, and they're handcuffing some of Diddy's sons. And Diddy, we don't know exactly where he is, but he seems to not be within the United States right now. And it just invites all of this wild, wild theorizing about what's going on. And of course, with the cameras especially, we get all of the Epstein comparisons. He's obviously friends with a million celebrities. There's even a royal connection, although it's a pretty flimsy one. And it feeds this powerful need among the public to believe that our ruling class is full of pedophiles. And so we're going to have stories like this till the end of time, I assume.
So he hasn't been arrested yet.
He is not.
Okay. So.
Or criminally charged for that matter.
So but some of these, there were people in handcuffs.
Yes. His sons were seen handcuffed during the raids, but I don't believe they were actually arrested.
Why were they handcuffed then?
Just in case. I don't know. Okay. I'm not with the DHS. Now you're interrogating me. Who's under investigation here, Charlie?
All right. So, Jack, do you have thoughts on Mr. Diddy?
So I will just say that I have actually gotten reached out to by a number of people, both really actually before this and during Hollywood contacts and others who have basically said, look, you're basically looking at kind of a Harvey Weinstein / Jeffrey Epstein situation where it's sort of like gatekeeping, casting, couching, plus a little bit of blackmail mixed in, where essentially this was the same type of thing that was going on with Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, whatever you want to go by, Sean Combs, as was going on with those previous situations. And that there's going to be a lot more names added to this. Now, people already know Beyonce, Jay-Z are actually already tied to this. Some people are even named in the lawsuits, and pretty high-named people. A lot of other rappers, and by the way, including another guy, Prince Harry was also named in some of these, because this was sort of the scene, right? The scene was you would go to the party and you would be an up-and-comer, or maybe you weren't an up-and-comer yet. You wanted to weigh in, et cetera, et cetera. So you hold all these parties, and then eventually, you know, stuff happens. One thing leads to another. People take pictures. People get video. And now so all of a sudden there's blackmail. And these blackmail rings and these blackmail abilities go over on people. And so, you know, again, as to say, like, everyone deserves their day in court for sure. And I will hold to that for P. Diddy the way I would for everybody. But at the same time, I'm just saying that I've been getting a lot of people reaching out to me saying this is 100% what's been going on. And this idea that, you know, that this guy was all just, you know, doing this all above board. It's just a complete joke.
So that is an interesting thing. We once again have, once this has come out, people are digging out all these clips where, like, Dave Chappelle has implied that P. Diddy's really weird, and other people have suggested he does all this bad stuff.
There's
we
do so much tape about this.
Yeah, so we definitely do. Let's see. How about we just let's do 58. This is okay. 50 Cent.
He says things. He doesn't even know what he's saying. It's like fruity. Instant has gone off. When people say that to me, I get a little uncomfortable. I get uncomfortable. Like he said something to me one time, a long time ago, at Chris Lighty's wedding. He told me he'd take me shopping. I looked at him like, what'd you just say? Let me move, man, before I do something. You're going to make me mess up the wedding.
Oh, that's a nice gesture.
Let me get out. No, dude, take me. That's what a guy says to me.
I want to, let's play this one. This is Justin Bieber, who was underage at the time with Sean Combs, play cut 62.
Justin, you ever seen the movie 48 Hours? Right now, he's having 48 hours with Diddy, him and his boy. They're having the times of their lives, like, you know, where we hanging out and what we doing. We can't really disclose, but it's definitely a 15-year-old's dream. I don't have legal guardianship of him, but for the next 48 hours, he's with me. So, and we're going to go full, buck full crazy.
I'm going crazy.
Buck full crazy?
He never had a chance.
That would explain why Justin's so screwed up. He might have been abused or something. I don't know.
Or, you know.
I can't believe that video's out there.
Yeah, so. It turns out these things, everyone's like, oh, everyone was saying Diddy was so strange for a long time. And you just wonder, maybe it's that it's just Hollywood where everyone sees people committing creepy sex crimes all the time. And
all
then
the
just
time.
They just don't report it. They're just like, oh, yeah, Harvey Weinstein. And then they project this onto the rest of the world where they'll say, you know, oh, yeah, your random company is just full of sex predators. No, Hollywood is full of sex predators.
Yes.
Because it's full of liberals.
Play well, cut. You want to say something really quick?
Well, I just want to say, I think that because we're now in the era, I mean, think about all the crap that happened before the era of social media, of recording, everything else. Think about how many recordings are out there. And somebody said this once to me, because there's a person that we know records a lot of stuff of their own stuff. That puts a target on your back to become a, you know, basically just have the feds come in and take all your stuff. And then they have all of that. So think about all the famous people that exist that have a bunch of recordings like this. They're just like this P. Diddy situation, or this, that's probably why he got, part of the reason why he got raided, that there's all this stuff's going to be coming out over the next years and decades, potentially, that's going to be coming out about people all the time.
Let's play this next piece of tape here. 59.
But he needed to build a spot over there in Bali for his boy Puffy. Puffy need. I warned Keefe D to take his ass over there. There's no extradition laws over there. So I'm warning you now, Puffy. Take your ass over there. Reggie prediction. I know Puffy is smart enough, and he probably done already cleaned his houses. But sexual predators, what do? They hold on to their tapes. And cops know that. So I wouldn't be surprised if some storages or some of Puffy properties be getting raided real soon.
Okay, so who is that and when did he post that?
That I'll need to hear from someone else. I'm not entirely sure.
Who is it?
I don't know. The note in the clip sheet said rapper. I don't know. I okay, know well, approximately three more rappers than you do. So
well, I certainly don't know who that is. So Mr. Rapper comes out and says that P. Diddy better find a country for extradition. Is that what he's saying there?
I think he's saying that Diddy has to get out of the country and go somewhere with no extradition because stuff is going to come down and take him out.
That would be more credible if it happened before.
I think so. Benny had it on his show, which is why he had it. And I assume it was something predating him. But I guess, I don't know. Producers bail me out here. But it is funny. He mentions that where, you know, they'll be raiding it and they'll try to destroy the evidence. Diddy has multiple homes and they only raided two of them. And there was discussion afterwards. Oh, yeah, the feds will likely raid his home in New York soon.
We know. It's Reggie Wright Jr. I want to be respectful. I don't want to just call him Rapper, man.
I'm going to call him Mr. Rapper.
Okay, well, he has a name. Reggie Wright Jr. And it was before the raid. So super credible then, okay? That adds a lot of credibility then.
Yeah. So they were saying, they'll probably raid his home in New York soon. Well, why don't you raid it now? Why didn't you raid it already? You can't announce you're going to raid something. They'll get rid of the evidence. It's so much bizarre stuff from our government. It's almost like they're trying to cover it up.
Almost like they're trying to cover it up. Okay, let's go to wellness company. Let's go right here. Blake's favorite partner. When it comes to staying healthy on the go, you can never be too prepared. Whether you're a frequent traveler, remote worker, or an avid outdoorsman, or literally anyone with a pulse, the Wellness Company Travel Emergency Kit is going to be here, your new best friend. Ivermectin saved Tyler Boyer's life, and it might save yours. Right, Tyler?
Yep. It sure did, 100%.
We say it every time. The Wellness Company Travel Emergency Kit contains 6 prescription medications and over-the-counter meds, a comprehensive guidebook, and crucial medical supplies, all carefully curated so you get every moment of your trip. With a team of renowned medical professionals, including Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Drew Pinsky, standing behind every kit, you know that you're going to be in trusted hands no matter where life takes you. Don't leave anything to chance. Go to twc.health/CJ and order your travel emergency emergency kit today. That is twc.health/CJ. What's inside? Boy, if you could pronounce this stuff, guys, good for you. Ciflaxolin, serflaxaflanin, ondansetron, scopolamine, musaprobacin. Okay. Anyway, we'll put the list on the website, twc.health/CJ. Okay. Final topic.
We've got, we can talk about Huberman or we can talk about the people getting punched in the face in New York.
Let's start with the punch in the face because Huberman, I need to kind of educate myself a little bit more.
The quick thing is getting punched in the face in New York. So there's several viral TikToks where a bunch of women just talk about being punched in the face by random people in New York. The first one that went viral was clip 100.
Okay.
You guys, I was literally just walking and a man came up and punched me in the face. Oh my God, it hurts so bad. I can't even talk. Literally, I fell to the ground and now this giant goose egg is forming and I'm like, oh my God, it's so crazy.
But there's several of these, so we'll just let's go to another one, 101.
I literally just got punched by some man on the sidewalk. He goes, sorry, and then punches me in the head. Holy fuck. What the hell just happened? Oh my God.
So there are these groups of hoodlums that just walk
one,
the streets?
It's just women, one guy. Just, one guy will just walk up and just smash a woman in the face.
It's more than one person that's doing this, meaning that...
So it seems that there has been a viral wave of this involving one guy who has been arrested. Let me see. Where's the article here? And so several people have been getting arrested, or one guy has been getting arrested for this, and he is, I believe, the grandson of Marcus Garvey, and he ran for mayor as a member of the...
He claims he's the grandson of Marcus Garvey.
Okay. All right. And what's incredible about this, one, is that you could just do this with impunity, because in New York, you can punch someone in the face, and you won't be tackled by bystanders because no one wants to get charged with, you know, murder if that person happens to drug out while they're being held down.
and or getting the wrong.
Police aren't going to chase him down. Or even if they do get arrested, if it's not a high profile political story, odds are very good they will be let out. This seems to be about a different person here. But did we get the video I sent you guys?
If you tackle the wrong guy and call him a guy, you could also be charged in New York. Right? You don't want to tackle.
I'll give you that one, Tyler. That was hilarious.
You don't want to tackle with pronouns involved.
Okay, no.
Unfortunately, I'm waiting on this clip here. A 57-year-old woman was punched in the face in Brooklyn, and they had to wire her mouth shut because her jaw was broken. So it's like the Simpsons.
But we don't know if this was all the same guy.
We don't. Right? Because, there is one that went viral.
There's one. Because it was like on like some TikTok influencer, but then they caught the guy, and this was the Marcus Garvey so-called grandson or whatever.
For sure.
But it's clear, it's not at all clear that there's not more than one person doing this. Like it could be, it seems to me like it's kind of like the knockout game, but for women that has kind of returned.
It's just, so this example that hopefully we'll have the clip soon, but this woman, 57-year-old woman, punched in the face, jaw wired shut, and apparently the suspect has 7 prior arrests and has, in fact, already is either been released or will soon be released and is not even eligible to be required to do bail. It turns out punching random people in the face is one of those things you can be let out for. But, oh, don't worry. I mean, if they don't show up for their court hearing, I guess we'll put out a notice for their arrest, which police will be in no hurry to actually execute. And there is something profoundly demented and insane that is taken hold in cities where here's a fact of life. We hear all this crap where, oh, people commit crime because they're driven by poverty. No, a lot of people commit crimes because they're deranged predators.
That is the number one talking point I get on campuses is they say poor people commit crimes. And there's no Theodore Dalrymple debunks this in his book.
It's total bullcrap.
At the bottom.
Yeah. It's total bullcrap. People commit crimes because they are predatory by nature.
Yes.
They find it fun. Why do people, like, look at what happens. There's an explosion of car thefts. Are people stealing cars because they then go and sell the car to get money? No. What's exploded is these kids, a lot of them are just teenagers, they'll steal a car and they'll just use it like an Uber. They'll drive for an hour somewhere and then they'll just ditch the car. They're doing it for fun. And they're not getting punished for it. And in cities, the version of this we get is, you have 6 psychos who like hurting women. Newsflash, a lot of men like hurting women, so they punch them in the face.
Or they become trans.
Yeah, or they become trans and then punch them in the face, and now they're sports heroes, and they'll get on the cover of ESPN or something.
That's what happens.
And it's just this sick stuff, and it's happening.
But I mean, I mean, kind of single women run New York. They're kind of like the most important demographic politically in New York. They make the most noise, and they're super involved in politics. Are they okay with this? Or are they going to put up with it?
So that's the thing. I think actually what happens is there are single women. They are very important for this. But I think when this stuff explodes, they kind of learn where they actually stand in the so-called progressive stack. You've heard about the progressive stack, right?
I'm fuzzy on
it. This is a literal idea the activists will have where you can just rank people by how privileged they are, and they will argue about where you should stand. So sometimes you'll see that like any white person is automatically at the bottom, even if they have all the other things. And like, so it'll often be like, okay, if you're black, you're at the top. And then if you're indigenous, and then if you're gay, you're higher than a straight person in the same group.
Yes.
And women should always be higher than any. They argue about this. And we've had cultural moments where you kind of allow women to think, oh, we're pretty high up. Like we have those, you know, the campus sexual assault thing. That was a big story about a decade ago.
The women's
march. And the women's march stuff. And they'll think like, okay, we're really high on the progressive stack. And then something comes along like, oh, actually, we're going to let criminals beat the crap out of you and not arrest them. And if you complain about it, you're a Karen. And we're going to pass a law called the Karen Act, where if you call the police over it and we don't like the fact that you did that, we will throw you in jail and fire you from your job for it.
Let's play cut 115. That adds some detail to this.
It is a random, unprovoked, vicious attack on a 57-year-old woman in Brooklyn. Watch as the suspect ignores another man walking nearby, then punches the woman in her face, causing her to stumble backwards.
What happened? Why are you hitting me? I was bleeding a lot. Mom, I'm so scared, I'm so afraid.
Dulce Pichardo was on the receiving end of that punch, her mouth now wired shut, her face fractured in several places, drinking food out of a straw for 6 weeks, permanent damage to her lower lip, 3 teeth knocked out, and she might need surgery.
That's a hard punch.
It's a real hard punch. Do these people get prison time or any consequential punishment?
Often no. And what's frustrating is it'll happen, but it's on this, yeah. It's like a political calculation. Oh, it'll finally be a big enough story on the news. And so maybe they'll vaporize one guy over it. But what you get over and over is like those guys on subways who are just trying to shove people on the tracks or attacking people is they'll do one thing after another with no consequences. And so they finally kill somebody. And then that's a big enough problem. We have to punish them. And that's another truth with crime. Anyone who's got to the level where they are killing people or seriously maiming them and shooting them almost always has lower level crimes where we could have stopped them. We could have imprisoned this person or punished this person enough to get them on a better track. And we choose not to do it. And then we act all shocked when they eventually kill someone. And then we let these same parasites who are enabling all this to happen come along and say, well, actually, it's a society and privilege that's to blame.
And then people say, well, where are the men? I can tell where the men are. Daniel Penny is a man who stood up against crime, and he's facing 15 years in prison. That's where men went. So men are like, screw it. I'm not going to defend the
men.
Men I'll go to jail. So if a individual, black or whatever color, you know, comes up and punches a woman in the face, and someone comes up and then tackles that guy and waits for the cops to come, the guy who tackled the criminal would probably be punished more than the person who...
Exactly. Men want to be heroic, but not very many men are going to be heroic if there is enormous social sanction against doing it.
Yes.
Men will do difficult and incredible things as long as they know they will be regarded as heroes for doing it. But if you're going to say you're evil for doing it, they won't. No one wants to get killed and then also be considered a bad guy afterwards.
Well, this is the core of New York. I mean, you look at Letitia James with what's going on. I mean, this is all connected, right? When you create a culture within a state, in a city for sure, where you're going after, where politics takes precedent, you know, with your prosecutors that are happening and people in their communities don't feel safe, you know, you start to have society unravel. I think that's what you're seeing in many of our states, particularly blue states. But I mean, this is the feeling. If you ask any average Republican, you know, what's the biggest issue outside of border security? It's, you know, people just don't feel super safe and secure in the country in which we live right now.
Final topic, Andrew Huberman.
All right. Well, so this is a big story this week. So Andrew Huberman, I'd actually never heard of him. I'm not a huge kind of lifestyle podcast listener.
Really?
No, not really. And
you think it's all woo-woo?
A lot of woo-woo.
Yeah, vitamin D, woo-woo.
He's really popular. He's pretty new. He only started a few years ago.
I like Andrew. Right? I like reflexively defended him. I don't even know what he's accused of. So people are like, Charlie, he's kind of like...
It's a pretty crazy thing.
He's kind of a Casanova.
So he is a cognitive scientist, does these podcast things. He's a legit scientist, has the PhD. They tried to take him down as like a phony scientist. That's not legit. Okay. He is...
Because if you were going to go there, he's like an actual professor of neurobiology and ophthalmology at Stanford.
100%. So. And he has an insanely popular podcast. One of the most popular in the world.
It's one of the top five most downloaded podcasts on the planet.
Yeah. Millions and millions of subscribers. So if you haven't heard of him, other people have. But this hit piece drops kind of, I don't want to say out of nowhere because there were some signs building up to this. But New York Magazine, which 2 months ago, their cover story was promoting polyamory. So suddenly they come out and they have... their headline, Andrew Huberman's Mechanisms of Control, the Private and Public Seductions of the World's Biggest Pop Neuroscientist. And it turns out that Andrew Huberman, apparently at every waking moment that he was not making a podcast episode, was juggling one of 6 different women. And the actual like mechanics of it are pretty impressive. Like, let me see if I can get the text here. Like he would literally be meeting one person. Yeah. The women compared timestamped screenshots of text and assembled an extraordinary record of deceptions. There was a day in Texas when, after Sarah left his hotel, Andrew slept with Mary and texted Eve. They found days in which he would text nearly identical pictures of himself to 2 of them at the same time. They realized that the day before he had moved in with Sarah in Berkeley, he had slept with Mary, and he had also been with her in December 2023, the weekend before Sarah caught him on a couch with a 6th woman. they realized that on March 21st, 2021, a day of admittedly impressive logistical jujitsu, while Sarah was in Berkeley, Andrew had flown Mary in from Texas to L.A. to stay with him in Topanga. While Mary was there, visiting from thousands of miles away, he left her and drove to meet Eve at a coffee shop where they had a serious talk about their relationship. They thought they were in a good place. He wanted to make it work.
But that's an extraordinary amount of reporting. But why is he being targeted? And he's being targeted because he's popular and because he goes straight after the pharmaceutical companies. He talks a lot about...
He's anti-big pharma.
Yes, he talks about solutions of how you don't need all these pharmacological agents, all these antidepressants, all these anti-anxiety medications, all this Ozempic, how you can improve your life.
Yep.
This is a hit job straight from Pfizer, AstraZeneca, 100%. Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson. Their dark arts, black propaganda PR operation said, we have to try to take out Andrew Huberman. This guy is getting into the hearts and minds of too many people, specifically young men. Jack, do you agree?
I think that's exactly what it is. I mean, you have to look at any of these people who come out there and whether they – we had Raw Nationalist on the show the other day, and that's exactly what we were talking about, that this is something that he gets into a lot as well on in his work and his writings. I don't know Huberman, but we happen to – Egg and myself have talked about this for a while, that it's clear that this has become something that, I don't know if you want to say it's a right-wing thing or, you know, just sort of an anti-mainstream opinion now, anti-mainstream position to be embracing holistic lifestyles, getting out of pharmaceuticals, getting into biohacking, these types of things. Charlie, I think you know something about ice baths, as a matter of fact.
I'm somewhat of a biohacker.
And it's amazing. Right. And so it's amazing. And by the way, incredible, because it's absolutely vitalist that the right is starting to embrace these things and should, by the way, in many ways, because this was predominantly, you know, sort of the place of like the woo woo hippies years ago. And, you know, they all turned into like greenies and climate changers. And so all of this information has been out there. And it turns out that by and large, there's been a lot of truth to it. And this is where Huberman gets in. Huberman, in a way, I would say, presents himself as conservative. I don't know that he's particularly political in any way. I think he's just not a guy who follows the data.
He follows the data. It's all about improving people's lives. And His audience is very similar to the Joe Rogan audience. So let's listen to this one here. Huberman says, quote, the health benefits of alcohol diminish after 2 weeks a drink. A risk of breast cancer for women rises. So if I was one of the top liquor companies, I would try to take Huberman out. He's telling millions of people that alcohol is poison, which it is poison. Play cut 105.
And I don't tell people what to do. I give them the facts so they can make the best decisions for them. I mean, it's very clear that unless you're an alcoholic, and provided you're an adult, that, you know, two drinks per week maximum is about the upper threshold beyond which you're going to start getting some health detriments.
That's called a warm up to a warm up in England.
Yeah. So I've never been a big drinker. I don't drink. I'm lucky that it's not something that's a strong draw for me.
Me too.
You know, I have friends that are recovered alcoholics. And, you know, their lives are so much better as a function of being sober. But for non-alcoholics, I mean, I think everyone should just know the health risks, especially women, where the risks for breast cancer and other types of cancer.
And that's just the taste. He talks a lot about how if you don't eat well, if you don't exercise, you don't sleep well. His podcasts are very data driven and they're long. They're 2.5 to 3 hours and they're almost just like a lecture. Here's what this study says about this. Here's how you could increase your testosterone. Here's what might be limiting your testosterone. Let's go to this one here. How your brain changes by doing hard things. Huh? Play cut 106.
Most people don't know this, but there's a brain structure called the anterior mid-cingulate cortex. But what's interesting about this brain area is there are now a lot of data in humans, not some mouse study, showing that when people do anything that they, and this is the important part, that they don't want to do.
Right.
It's not about adding more work. It's about adding more work that you don't want to do.
Yes.
This brain area gets bigger.
Yep.
Now, here's what's especially interesting about this brain area to me. The anterior mid-cingulate cortex is smaller in obese people. It gets bigger when they die. It's larger in athletes. It's especially large or grows larger in people that see themselves as challenged and overcome some challenge. And in people that live a very long time, this area keeps its size. Scientists are starting to think of the anterior mid-cingulate cortex not just as one of the seats of willpower, perhaps, actually the seat of the will to live.
So the final one you want to play
amazing.
Here.
Amazing.
It's amazing. And by the way, that's his whole shtick, which is like, here's what the neuroscience says about watching porn. His stuff on porn has been viewed over 100 million times. If I was the porn industry, I would want to take him out. If I was the indulgence industry, I would want to take him out. If I was like the pleasure-based industry.
And if any industry had a bunch of people wait, but, that they could throw to seduce a person and get him into
so you're saying that, so you're saying that this is a honeypot operation.
Not really, because actually all the women are like 42 years old. So, sorry, bad news.
So he's big into that. Final one is
hey, Charlie, though.
Yes, yes.
If I can double tap that to kind of bring us back to the first subject, isn't it interesting that so many of the behaviors that are proscribed as sinful in the Bible are also now coming up to be on the other side of where the neuroscientific data leads
isn't
us?
Isn't it the Bible is true that monogamy wait, so, is so good wait, for you
science and having children proves and the doing Bible hard was
things?
Right?
A man shall not and work,
things
he shall
that are
not
sinful
eat. That alcohol
are actually
is poison.
Bad. For you?
And that a man who drinks forgets the law? It's like Andrew Huberman, through science, is proving the truth of the Bible. Last one is this. Play cut 110.
You can't have long-term affairs with six different partners.
Yeah, unless he's juggling multiple phone accounts or something.
Right. And some men try to do that, but I think it's could be very taxing.
And with that, we will end it. Final thoughts, anybody?
You know, I just wish he'd, followed the science on it's probably bad to juggle seven women in your life. That's got to be stressful.
It's got to be stressful.
Hey, if you're single, I would say, guys, I would say to all the young kings out there, work the rotation until you find the one that makes you want to stop the rotation.
Andrew Huberman, if Andrew Huberman does a podcast soon about STDs, then we'll know. You never know.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Have a wonderful Easter. Keep on committing thought crimes, and Tyler will be very happy. Arizona's trailing to Clemson.
Yes. Thank goodness.
By 3 points. It's going to be really tight. I've been watching it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Get U of A out.
God bless. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.